The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network. I want to mention a great resource for writers, and this month's sponsor, Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories. I'll expound later in the show, but the short version is this long-awaited book about the craft of creative writing from New York Times bestselling author Steve Almond sets out to debunk the well-meaning but misguided myths that hold us back from writing our deepest and most honest work. Pick up a copy today of Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, wherever you buy books, more soon. Greetings, scribes. I have got some exciting news to share. The Writer Files now has an exclusive Patreon community where subscribers will get exclusive access to uncut ad-free interviews, a writer's happy hour, bonus breakdowns, and content from productivity and publishing experts each month. In the meantime, just head over to patreon.com/thewriterfiles. It's free to join Patreon to get a preview, and you can upgrade anytime. That's patreon.com/thewriterfiles. Help us start something special.
The biggest piece of kind of this looming debut is that for a very long time, my whole life, writing has been very private. It was like my diary. I was like, Mom, don't look at my notebooks. It's embarrassing. I don't want you to see what I'm writing. Because like I was using two of the early stories as a way to figure myself out. And like, what are these feelings that I'm having? I'm growing into a whole person. Like, I don't know how to make sense of this. So I'll project it onto these characters and see what they come up with. And maybe that will resonate with me. But now it's like all of these people get to read my diary to a certain extent. So it's exciting in a way because it's like I have made the conscious choice to like, yes, I want to invite these people into the way that I see the world and the way that I want to present these stories. And I want people to see how I view, you know, connection and the act of falling in love and the act of having hope and all of the stuff that the book presents. It is just a little bit scary, but more than anything, it's very exciting to feel like, or to know that out there are going to be people who are going to resonate with this and be able to, you know, it's sort of like, there are more of us out there. It'll be fun to kind of see who really falls into lockstep with it and who is the person who's like, yes, that's exactly what I'm looking for.
And welcome back to The Writer Files. I am still your humble host, Kelton Reed, wishing you pages, patience, and perseverance per usual. Critically acclaimed debut novelist Issa Arsene spoke to me about humanizing machines and the creative process, how to write soft sci-fi, and her genre-bending, timey-wimey literary debut, Shoot the Moon. Issa is an author and audio engineer based in South Texas and has published several short stories and pieces of experimental interactive media. Shoot the Moon is Arsene's debut novel, inspired by her own childhood in New Mexico, and named a BookBub Best Book of Fall, Shondaland Best Book of October 2023, among others. It has been described as a puzzle box time travel story about an intelligent but lonely NASA secretary, her relentless drive to live a big life in a world that would keep her small. Publishers Weekly called it an innovative novel that navigates the back and forth of the story's time travel events, threading them into the highlights of women's scientific achievements. In this file, Issa and I discussed studying music composition and blending the organic and machine, why music is how we decorate time, her unique blend of interests, including Doctor Who, what it means to write in the age of genre benders, why storytelling is a quirk of evolution, and a lot more. Stay calm and write on. And don't forget, you can always support this show by heading to writerfiles.fm, where you can also sign up for email updates and other resources for writers. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click follow to automatically see new interviews in your podcatcher as soon as they're published, and drop us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you tune in to help other writers find us. All right, we are back on The Writer Files. I am honored today to be joined by an esteemed guest. I have an acclaimed debut novelist, Issa Arsene, is joining us today. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
Thanks for having me, Kelton. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So what's going on over there? What's the vibe? I mean, this is a pretty big debut for you, kind of a breakout hit, it would seem. Lots of great blurbs and reviews. And how are you feeling? What's the vibe over there?
I'm feeling good. It's very exciting. It is my first book baby that I have ever widely put into the world. And I cannot wait for everybody to read it.
Yeah. And we are talking about Shoot the Moon. Of course, I want to get into the book, the inspiration behind it, the work that went into it, the love for your first book baby. But yeah, let's talk about kind of this really interesting story. And I understand that you are or were an audio engineer as well. Tell us a little bit about kind of this interesting career path and how you charted this debut hit.
So from your lips to God's ears, I hope it ends up a hit. That would be very cool. So I am currently an audio engineer as well, on the side from writing. I fell into it by way of music composition. So I have my bachelor's in music. I went to Temple up in Philly, and I studied music composition. I initially wanted to go into film soundtracking. I'm a huge film buff. And the more classes that I took and the more I sort of explored what the field had to offer, the school had a really, really robust, it still does, but back then it was smaller, a really robust computer music department. So I learned a lot from some really, really cool guys who were like working with the first computers in the 60s and 70s up at Columbia, learning how to make music with computers. And that tendency to sort of blend the very human with the very computery, like kind of blending organic with machine and the old with the new, has always been something that I'm super interested in. I have a deep love for early music, so like medieval stuff and things from like the 16th and 17th centuries. And that sense of kind of dragging history forward into modern times is something that I still do with my writing too. And the way that we interact with computers and sort of the way that we, music in particular, there's that saying, I forget who said it, I think it was Dali, I don't know, don't quote me on this, but there's somebody who says that music is the way that we decorate time. And I think it is a very special medium, because, you know, time is like the one thing, the one resource that we have that we can't touch. It is completely beyond our control. We can't change it. We can't bend it. We can't make it move faster. We can't make it move slower. So to be able to sort of take all of these things that I love and put them together in a book like Shoot the Moon, you know, we've got history, we've got romance, we've got familial ties, we've got weird timey-wimey stuff. It was a really fun story to put together with sort of all of these influences. And it is a really fun time capsule of, you know, a very specific blend of all of these things that make me who I am. And there are lots of little pieces in me, as I think there is in everything that any writer puts out. But I'm really proud of the way it came together. But yeah, there's a lot to talk about in it. So whatever you want to kind of use as a jumping off point, I'm totally down.
Yeah. Well, it's super interesting to hear about your interests as both. I mean, would you call yourself not only an audio engineer, but have you composed any music? Or
Oh yeah.
Do you play music?
I haven't very recently, but there's a lot of work that I've got from my time in college. You know, that's part of the process, is like you do your juries and you have pieces that you present, you get things performed, you sort of learn how to work with musicians, and you know what kind of thing gets distilled as like your thing. And a lot of what I ended up doing by the end of my time in school was learning how to blend vocal performance and computer output. So it would be like you sing something, or you say something, or you have somebody play something into a microphone or into some sort of array that's capturing the recording. And then the computer will manipulate it and sort of sing along with you. It really does humanize a lot of the machine element of it. And I had a professor who did like a robot opera, and we had these little robots that he programmed that were moving around on stage and could sing along with us. And by the end of the performance, like they'd scoot past, somebody would be like recalibrating them, and you'd be like, oh, sorry, excuse me. So they become like very human as you go along. And it's just fun to kind of have that extra awareness of like, okay, you know, that we do put ourselves into all of these things that we make. Like, you know, there's an element of this love of the creator that gets put into hardware and software, and it does translate, I think, over across all of the arts. And I do consider computer science and work with hardware that is an art to a certain extent. And I think that it's fun to be able to draw the parallels between something that feels so different as like a very creative field, like writing or composing, and then you kind of turn the coin on the other side and it's like, yes, but there is still an elegance and a fluency and a very artistic way of thinking and a creative process that has to come in when you're doing something that might not be what we consider artistic, quote unquote.
Yeah. That's super interesting. I mean, I can't recall speaking with another author with such a unique background, but it's really cool to hear about. Earlier in the show, I mentioned an invaluable resource for writers. Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories based on 3 decades of writing, failing, and trying again. Author Steve Almond is a beloved professor at Harvard and Wesleyan and the acclaimed New York Times bestseller of 12 books of fiction and nonfiction. And in Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, Steve employs the radical empathy he displayed as a co-host of the Dear Sugars podcast with Cheryl Strayed, where they explored the joys and trials of storytelling to explode myths that hold us back from writing our deepest and truest work. The book includes chapters on plot, character, and chronology, but travels far beyond the earnest intentions of most craft books. It also includes writing prompts to generate new work. Pulitzer Prize-winning author Richard Russo called it one of the best books on writing he's ever read, and also the funniest. Pick up a copy of Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories wherever you buy books, and add it to your TBR today. And just a quick aside to revisit the exclusive Writer Files Patreon community, where subscribers get access to uncut ad-free interviews, a writer's happy hour, bonus breakdowns, and a lot more. I know that for serious writers, it can be more distracting than ever to cut through the noise, stay productive, and home in on what's happening in the publishing industry. Over 8 years, we've provided a looking glass into the habits of professional writers and publishing industry insiders. And as your humble host, I've decided to launch a membership-based Patreon for serious scribes to cut through the noise, swap tips and tricks, and hang out with like-minded peers. Just head over to patreon.com/thewriterfiles for bonus writing resources, monthly episode breakdowns, writer's happy hour, a community of your peers, ad-free episodes, and more. It's free to join. To get a preview, and you can upgrade anytime, that's patreon.com/thewriterfiles. Help us start something cool and special. Keep calm and write on. It sounds like quite a few influences on your writing. So how did you find fiction? Is it something that you have always done? Is it something that you had aspired to do? Where did the novel kind of spring out of?
I've always been a reader. My parents were very keen on getting my sister and I interested in reading. And once, you know, you get caught by the library bug and hopefully it never lets go. And it has never let go. You know, I was obsessed with picture books when I was a kid. And then that moved into middle grade and chapter books and all of I have a really, really, really colorful imagination, to say the least. So it was a really great outlet for me to be able to be like, oh, you know, I get to sort of exercise this muscle that I have in my head that's like constantly hungry for more things. Like, I want to read these crazy fantasy series. I want to read this historical fiction series. It was like the late 90s, early 2000s. There was a series called My America, and it was like these diary books that were written from the perspective of kids during like important pieces of American history. And like, I'm sure looking back on them, they're like deeply whitewashed and like very much a product of their time. But I was obsessed with those. Like, I read every single one of those. I think I did like 3 book reports on them, like to dress up as the characters to be like, I read this book and it was great. But like, I have really always kind of gone with both feet into pieces of fiction that capture me, that I enjoy, and that sort of just light up all of these receptors in my head. And it was, you know, it's very addicting to feel like I have the, you know, there's this thing that gives me the freedom to just experience and feel and explore all of these things that in real life, you know, I might not have the vocabulary to explain what this is, but when you're reading, you get to sort of just run rampant with these feelings and let them wash over you and experience something different. Like you get to read things written by people who are coming from such a different background from you or seeing the world through such a different lens. It's really heady to be able to feel like you're stepping into somebody else's shoes. And I just have always, like, you know, again, the first book series that I really was like, I'm obsessed with this, was A Series of Unfortunate Events by Lemony Snicket. That, like, it's got such a specific aesthetic. The characters are so vibrant. Like, his writing style is so smart and, like, really cares about making the reader fall in love with the language. And from there, I was just like, I want to do this. Like, I bought a notebook when I was 8 with, like, babysitting money. And then just from there, it was...
At 8?
And it's so cute looking back on them. Like, you can tell exactly what I was reading because what the things that I'm, you know, the characters that I am making up to myself and the stories that I'm coming up with and the situations that I'm putting them in, it was very much like, I've described it to my editor before as playing Barbies with myself still. Like, I'm almost 30 and I'm still playing Barbies where it's just like, this character is talking to this character and like, maybe I'll make them fight. Maybe I'll make them kiss. Maybe I'll like make them go on a big adventure. It is all still just dollhouse to me. And that, I think, keeping the joy of it has made it something that has always been a safe place and a positive and just a very important piece to have for myself. And honestly, I think the biggest piece of kind of this looming debut is that for a very long time, my whole life, writing has been very private. It was like my diary. I was like, Mom, don't look at my notebooks. It's embarrassing. I don't want you to see what I'm writing. Because like, I was using too the early stories as a way to figure myself out. And like, what are these feelings that I'm having? I'm growing into a whole person. Like, I don't know how to make sense of this. So I'll project it onto these characters and see what they come up with. And maybe that will resonate with me. But now it's like, all of these people get to read my diary to a certain extent. So it's exciting in a way because it's like I have made the conscious choice to like, yes, I want to invite these people into the way that I see the world and the way that I want to present these stories. And I want people to see how I view, you know, connection and the act of falling in love and the act of having hope and all of the stuff that the book presents. It is just a little bit scary, but more than anything, it's very exciting to feel like, or to know that out there, there are going to be people who are going to resonate with this and be able to, you know, it's sort of like, there are more of us out there. It'll be fun to kind of see who really falls into lockstep with it and who is the person who's like, yes, that's exactly what I'm looking for. Because those are going to be the people that I end up really doing all of this for at the end of the day. Like, it will always be first and foremost for me, but I know that there is going to be at least some small crop of people out there who are also going to love it as much as I do. And that's really exciting for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's pretty fascinating. So you've called it a puzzle box time travel story. Or, you know, I mean, I'm putting words in your mouth, but you did say this about your desire to write this particular novel, I believe. And let's talk about the book and you've already mentioned some of the cross-pollination and of course your love of writing and literature, but yeah, let's talk about Shoot the Moon. So it's been called the story of a singular life at multiple points in time, a woman's quest to honor both her head and her heart amid the human toll of scientific progress. We don't want to do too many spoilers, but I thought it was cool that Publishers Weekly had said, Arsene expertly navigates the back and forth of the story's time travel events, threading them into the highlights of women's scientific achievements, and have been compared by Country Living to both Lessons in Chemistry and The Time Traveler's Wife. And of course, you mentioned your love of the film Arrival. I wanted to ask about some of your influences and some of the backstory behind kind of how you dreamt up this timey-wimey thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think timey-wimey obviously is like, number one, it's the basis of all of my science fiction, kind of this wacky love for the weird. I grew up as a, you know, young teenager watching Doctor Who and Torchwood and like all of that science fiction that was just not afraid to be totally off the walls nuts. It's whimsy and like just saying like, yeah, sure, let's try it. You know, why not? Like it's I like soft sci-fi that sort of allows itself to be very hand wavy, to say like, this is the thing that's happening and we're not going to explain all of it. Like you'll get enough to feel like this is something that could maybe potentially happen in some universe out there. But, you know, you're not going to get all the answers because that's not the kind of stuff that I like reading. So it's not the kind of stuff that I'm going to end up writing. But yeah, definitely like Doctor Who stuff where it's just like, this is weird and this is happening and we're just going with it. And then kind of on the flip side of it is heavier stories like Arrival that I had fallen in love with the short story. I can never remember the author's name, which I feel so bad about, but it's the story of the rest of your life. I think it's called, or the story of your life, that is about this scientist who has this discovery that just completely overtakes her. And she ends up working for this. She puts herself in this footsteps of the greater good, of really feeling like this is something that belongs to her, but also it needs to happen for humanity's sake. And then the film that came out in 2016, I saw it at like a very seminal moment of my life where like a lot of things were happening, a lot of things were converging. And I saw the movie and it was just one of those moments where like you're bawling in the theater, just being like, oh my God, like just true catharsis. And then also I think the other major piece that I can point to is the Miyazaki film, The Wind Rises. It's initially at the time it was Hayao Miyazaki's final film with his studio. But he came back for another one, obviously, because you don't just stop when you're that good. But it's about an aeronautics engineer in Japan in the pre-war years before World War II and the lead up to that. But it's stunning. I think it's the most historical movie that he's done where like there is a little bit of a fantasy element where there is kind of this piece of daydreams and hope being this fantastical thing that is like the one connection you have left to your childhood. And that's something that I was very keen on exploring is like, how does one's childhood and sort of how does the world that we experience as children affect us as adults? And is, you know, if there was any way to have that slide back and forth, if we could, you know, if you could have a moment to revisit that time of yours, or like, what would you give to yourself as a child, from the adult perspective, knowing what you know about yourself and knowing what you know about what the world is going to become, like, what's the thing that's most important to kind of return to your childhood self? And it was a fun meditation. The initial draft of it, I think the core of it is always the same. It's been kind of the same thread from the beginning. But as I've done the revision work on it, and as I had my agent look at it, as I had my editor look at it once she acquired it, the story really did distill into something that I'm super proud of. I think it speaks to all of the beats and all of the themes and all of the kind of elements that I wanted to put together to make this into something that was really special and kind of, I'm just proud that something that has this many pieces of the things that I love in it gets to be the first thing that I show to everybody. It's cool.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Yeah, I mean, when I think of authors that talk about the way that they write and the way that they kind of process these disparate thoughts and put them together and distill them into this, into the creative process. Were you listening? I mean, you had talked about, you know, some film and literature influences. Arrival, which you had mentioned, is a adaptation of the story of your life, which was, yeah, I think a Nebula award-winning novella by Ted Chiang.
Yes, Ted Chiang. That's it. Thank you.
And then, of course, Miyazaki, who is just a pioneer, but that's really interesting, blending the historical and, of course, some of this time travel stuff. But talk a little bit about, do you, as you're writing and you're putting this longer piece together, do you, are you listening to music at all? Is that something that you can do? Do, are you, somebody has to sit in silence as you're composing?
It depends. I have worked very hard to make sure that I can write wherever and whenever I want myself to write. I've very much turned it into a habit more than anything, which it really works for me. Like I work on multiple different platforms. I can write on my phone when I'm sitting on the couch downstairs. I can write on my laptop at my desk with like the desk lamp on. I'm in my flow mode. Which used to be the only way that I could write, but I was very cognizant of the fact that like that's a rare thing these days that I can make the time for that. So I need to be able to just kind of bang it out whenever. But I do tend to write in silence. I like to be able to hear the conversations happening and kind of set the scene for myself in my inner ear. So I do like having quiet or instrumental music. No lyrics. I get distracted. Like even if it's a different language, if it's in English, if it's Spanish, if it's whatever, I have to have no words. But beyond that, in terms of like music and like setting the tone, I make a playlist for everything that I write, even when I just start throwing the idea together. Like it's what helps me distill sort of the texture and the color and the mood of how I'm going to be seeing the story unfold for myself in my mind's eye. Writing for me is a very internal process. Like if you ever see me at work, my expression is just like, I always have like brow furrowed. I'm kind of like making expressions along to myself as I'm matching what's happening on the page. Sometimes I'll mouth things, or even if I'm alone in the house, like my poor husband probably hears me talk to myself all the time. Like I'll speak things out loud to just like make sure that they feel right. Or it's a very active process for me. It's fun. And I like, that's part of the reason that I think it's something that I enjoy doing so much, is because I like to keep it fun. But also like, I think blending different media together, where it's like, I do get inspiration from film, I get inspiration from music, I get inspiration from other books, from art, from architecture, from nature. I think nowadays we have so much media that's surrounding us all the time. It's kind of a fool's errand to expect genre to play in its own lines anymore. Like it's I feel like the convention of what to expect from genre now, we are certainly stepping into an age where like everything's a genre bender, because we have so many things at our disposal all the time that it's very easy for us to be able to like try on something new, where it's like, yeah, maybe I don't usually read crime novels, but like I'm gonna pick one up and I'm gonna read it, and like, hey, I really like this is great. And surprise, you have the internet and you can access anything that you want at any time. I do think that like the information age has given us a lot of really cool tools to use to break past some of the more conventional barriers that we have really made for ourselves in terms of creative progress. So I think it's cool that like I am seeing more books these days get labeled as like, oh, this is genre bender, or like something that sort of bucks convention. It's exciting to see more and more of that, because I do think that like, I don't know what it's going to be, but I feel that we're certainly on the cusp of like a new era of what storytelling is going to be. We have so many mediums that we can do now. We've got film, books, games, art. Anything can be a story. So it's just cool to, you know, be able to engage with that and feel like I'm a part of that now in like a big way. It's cool.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And a kind of a cool way to think about it, almost like a, yeah, as we're seeing more, as you put it, like genre benders. And I always ask authors, like, how do you describe the book? Because they're going to try to put you in a box.
They will. And like, that's part of the fun, is to see what kinds of boxes it gets put in. And I think, like, I don't know, I think overall, everything that I write has some sort of, it at its core, everything is an interpersonal drama. It is people trying to figure out how to exist comfortably or be people with other people. And sometimes that's a romance. Sometimes that's like, you know, a conflict of interest between others. But it is like, I don't know. I feel like writing and storytelling in general for me is all this giant quest to sort of figure out like how to be a person. Because it is, to me, the way that I see the world is there's a lot of confusing pieces of like, why do people do this? Why is this expected? Why, you know, why is this convention the way it is? So it very much is like making these characters as templates of like, this is person A, this is person B, sort of spin the top and let it go and see like what happens. Do I use this as like a primer to teach myself? Which I think it was very much in the early days when I was a kid, certainly. But now it's mostly, it is such a long flexed muscle of mine that it's very much a way that it's a primary way that I connect with other people. Because I do think that like the special thing about humanity, because you look at it throughout all of time, is that we tell stories to each other. Like that is a thing that separates us from a lot of other animals, is that, you know, we all have the same drive to survive. Some of us have shared features like two legs, two arms, fingers, toes, whatever. But humans have always told stories to each other. And I think that that is something that is very special, that is very specific to like this point in all of history, all of time, this specific quirk of evolution, whatever it is that gave us this ability to share stories with each other. I think it's very important that we engage with that and you know, bring that forward and develop that. And I'm very lucky to be able to have a stake in the ground with that phenomenon of people telling stories to each other. I think it's really magical that we can share other, you know, whole other worlds with each other. You can sort of take a snapshot of your own mind and say, here, this is how I see things. And there are people who will be able to be like, oh my gosh, I see it that way too. And that is a very special, very deep kind of connection that I think is really the reason that we all just keep doing this over and over again.
Amazing. I love that. That's a really cool perspective. And I think important right now, especially as you know, so many writers are just trying to find their voice at this time, this really strange time in history. Well, we'll have to have you back. What are you working on now?
I am working on doing revisions for book two, which is currently with my editor. It's been announced. It's called The Unbecoming of Margaret Wolfe.
Ooh.
And it's set in mid-century. It's about a couple in a lavender marriage, and they have a summer that really turns their whole life on their head. And then in the drafting dugout, there's a Western happening.
Oh, cool.
Indie, but yeah, it's fun. It's going to be a fun one.
All right. Well, cool. Definitely look forward to those. And then, Shoot the Moon. Congrats. Been named BookBub's Best Books of Fall. Recently, Shondaland's Best Books of October 2023. Filled with all the thrills of space, a love interest, and more. This book will certainly grab your attention. Congrats on that reception. And the book will be published as of publishing of this program. So, we look forward to, you're going to be out there on tour. You're going to be hitting, looks like, Dallas and Santa Fe, of course, where part of the book is set. Not Los Alamos, I noticed. So,
No, I don't think they let people who aren't scientists do things there. I'd be like, hi, I wrote about science, but I am definitely not a scientist.
Okay. Well, that's cool. You're going to be out and about, and I'll point at your home base there. It is inarsen.com. And all the socials there. We'll look for you out on the road. And then we got to let you go, but we appreciate your time, your words, your wisdom, and wish you the best of luck out there.
Thank you so much, Kelton. I appreciate it. It's been super fun. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us for this file. And if you're a fan of the show, simply head over to writerfiles.fm for more. That's writerfiles.fm.